Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we're back with you here on The Punch Out Friday. Yes, that's right. It's Friday. Hopefully you had a great week. Hopefully you had a great week every week, but of course this week as always. And very happy to be with you as we always are, 5 p.m. Eastern time here on The Punch Out. Happy to be with you as we close out the week. Got plenty of stories, very important stories for you here. Going into the weekend, going to be talking about the $15 an hour minimum wage, which is just under attack in Florida in a ridiculous way, which hopefully doesn't succeed, but we'll tell you about that. We're going to talk a little bit more about Biden's China policies, which are emerging, and, you know, new boss looking very similar to the old boss, I'll say that much at least, but before we get to either of those issues, we want to start with the issue of the social and economic crisis facing this country and the just shambolic response from our so-called leading officials. Well, Democrats are doing what they think is talking tough here at the end of the week. They are threatening, quote unquote, to pass their stimulus bill with a simple majority and no Republican support next week, which just seems extraordinary. I mean, what are they waiting for? Until next week? I mean, why have they done nothing so far? It's mind-boggling in a way. I mean, the reason is, obviously, though, that they are trying to get some of these Republicans to agree in the name of bipartisanship. And for some reason, they're allowing these moderate Democrats to hold back life-saving aid in the interest of quote-unquote moderation or some other absurd name for defending the interests of profitable companies over average people. There's clearly just no time to waste at all here. As the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities notes, 24 million adults, that's 11% of all adults in the country, reported that their household sometimes or often did not have enough to eat in the last 7 days. 24 million people struggling to eat week to week. And when asked why, 80% said they couldn't afford to buy more food. That's the main reason. And adults in households with children, by the way, 6% more likely to be able to obtain food from a week-to-week basis. 6% more likely. 15.1 million adults living in rental housing are not caught up on rent. And renters with children were 13% more likely to be behind on rent. Nearly 4 in 10 children are living in households that are either struggling with hunger, rent, or both. I mean, just think about that. 11% of adults in the country don't have enough to eat. 6% more likely to not have enough to eat if you have kids. You got 1 in 5 adult renters not caught up on rent. And you're 13% more likely to be behind on rent if you got kids. And almost 40% of kids in this country are living in a house where they're either struggling with hunger, with rent, or both. Wow. Yet despite all of this, Democrats are insisting on not using their actual power. They don't need any Republicans at all to pass whatever they want, including their current inadequate but certainly something $1.9 trillion bill. And the moderate Democrats really are not an obstacle. I mean, bottom line, they have power because Dems won in November and in Georgia. People voted for Democrats for the $2,000 checks and some sort of real help in the midst of all these crises. The leadership can strip people of committee chairs, reassign them, or whatever. The handful of Democrats that are at issue here could easily be strong-armed. All the procedural back and forth is based on a rhetorical commitment to the unity and bipartisanship theme that bears no relationship at all to the scale of the crises facing working people in this country. It's just simply optics to be seen as operating within this prescribed framework of this fairy tale of U.S. capitalism where there's enlightened, quote-unquote, cross-party government. There are literally millions and millions of lives that are being deeply affected every single day there is a delay in the most negative ways possible for a totally meaningless concept. This is what it really means to say Democrats are beholden to capitalism, when they will withhold critical life-saving aid that isn't even controversial in the population at large to preserve a myth about a fake America that never was. Well, the Biden administration's approach to China is emerging a bit here, and it seems, well, just about as hawkish as the Trump administration. In a grilling from senators during her confirmation hearing, Biden's nominee for UN Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield was at pains to stress their anti-China credentials there on the Biden team. She stated that China is a quote-unquote strategic adversary that quote-unquote threatens the United States. She also noted here that the U.S. needs people on the ground around the world to, quote-unquote, counter China. The National Security Advisor nominee Jake Sullivan said this week that the U.S. needs to be prepared to act as well as impose cost on China for various perceived crimes. It's notable to contrast the rhetoric out of Beijing this week with what we heard from the United States. Chinese Vice President Wang Qishan told a group of U.S. CEOs this week that China wants mutual respect and cooperation. Mutual respect and cooperation. That's a quote in its relations with the United States. And I mean, China's own goal for themselves is to build a moderately prosperous society by 2030. Moderately prosperous society. That sounds very threatening. Yeah, right. Anyway, you might say to me, well, those are just words. But I would respond with, well, why is there such a rush to disbelieve them? There's wide agreement that there are crucial areas that the two countries could collaborate on to improve the lives of every person on Earth, most notably climate change. So why such a bellicose attitude when China seems to be at pains to be saying, well, let's just meet halfway, where there are some problems, perhaps? Well, obviously, it's not because, you know, there's security concerns or whatever, national security concerns, since being friendly with someone is not the same as being blind to a threat if there was to be one. And it's certainly not human rights, given the records of America's friends, which leads one to conclude that really there's only one option left. U.S. ruling elites are worried that China threatens their total control over the global economic and political spheres. The type of quote-unquote multilateralism they propose, China that is, in the world, is can help other nations leverage against the West, against the total imperial terms of trade and other forms of political discourse that exist now. Such a narrow set of interests, commercial elite interest, can only be promoted broadly in an atmosphere of mistrust and hatred. Both major parties have signed up to promote this set of interest, hence the rhetoric of mistrust and hatred. The question is, where is it leading us? I'd say towards more confrontation, and that seems to me more like a lose-lose than anything else for the population of the United States, China, and quite frankly, the Earth at large. Well, there's been a lot of discussion of late about the undemocratic nature of a lot of America's political institutions at the federal level, the Electoral College, and so on. But it also happens at the state level, too, like this week, when a Florida senator has started a crusade to have that body, the Florida legislature, reduce the minimum wage for anyone convicted of a felony, past, present, and future. Florida voters, however, voted by a wide majority to increase the minimum wage to $15 for everyone. So a complete contradiction of that. And this actually isn't uncommon for Florida, as the news website The Appeal points out. In 2017, after more than 70% of state voters elected to legalize medical marijuana, state lawmakers responded by temporarily making it illegal to smoke medicinal weed. In 2018, when a supermajority of Floridians voted to return voting rights to at least 1.4 million formerly incarcerated people, the Republican-dominated legislature passed a glorified poll tax that made sure that 800,000 of those people remained ineligible to vote. What's happening here is clear. Those who are promoting this measure want to create a pool of super exploitable, low-wage workers, people who have no choice but to work for wages below $15 an hour, which is barely a living wage in some areas anyway, because of this legal statute. It puts a huge hole in the state's law that, you know, a vast majority, supermajority of people in the state wants. And it, of course, creates a perverse incentive to dress up low-wage labor as hiring formerly incarcerated people as if it's some form of social good. And it also creates an incentive for supporters of low wages, who are more influential in the legislature than with the population at large, to press for harsher criminal laws. Yet another way the anti-democratic nature of this so-called democracy here in the U.S. plays itself out on a daily basis. That's the punch out for today. We're with you Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. here in New York, East Coast Standard Time, 2 p.m. in Los Angeles, Pacific Standard Time, and 9 p.m. GMT. And of course, you can support everything we do here at Breakthrough News at patreon.com/breakthroughnews. It's your patronage that keeps all of our offerings here at Breakthrough News moving forward. And of course, you can check us out across all your social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at BT Newsroom.